And now we bring you an encore presentation of the Tesla City Stories. It's 1944, and TBC is on the air. Again.
TBC!
Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones, no relation, by the way. I don't know how we missed it, but last month, August 20th to be exact, was National Radio Day, a day to celebrate radio and recognize the importance of our medium. So, a bit belatedly, we'll be making up for that today. Our guests are Jerry Chrisman and Brendan Jones, no relation, of Tesla City Stories, a radio theater troupe here in Portland. Jerry is co-founder and executive producer of Tesla City, and Brendan is their co-founder, director, and chief archivist. At a Tesla City Story show, you'll experience an evening of live radio theater with scripts from the archives of the little-known Tesla Broadcasting Company, or TBC, a radio network that operated during the latter years of World War II between 1943 and 1945. These scripts include a variety of shows from the Golden Age of radio, sitcoms, mysteries, thrillers, westerns, and science fiction, and they're performed live on stage just as they were back in the old days, complete with music and sound effects. Tesla City Stories' seventh season premieres this Friday, September 9th at Portland's Old Church Concert Hall. We're fortunate to have Jerry and Brendan here with us to preview the season opener, talk about the TBC, and celebrate the magic of radio and radio theater. Please join us for our conversation with Jerry and Brendan, which is already in progress. Well, Jerry and Brendan, welcome back. I think it's the first time we've talked for radio since the start of the pandemic.
Yes.
And as mentioned, this is Tesla City Story 7th season, going back to April 2014. But COVID caused a bit of an unplanned hiatus for you guys?
For us. Luckily, the rest of the world had no problem with COVID-19.
Right. They're going, what's COVID?
We were the only ones affected. It's so weird. No, yeah. It did. That's the hiccup. There was also a year that we were not in operation. We shut down and reconfigured. But other than those little gaps, yes, it is our seventh season and we're coming back. And we're very happy to still be around.
Yeah, like most people, we weren't sure if we could make it back, and we did, and we didn't really lose many people. We stayed relatively intact, so that was a blessing.
Yes, very much so. And by losing people and being intact, that includes cast and audience. So luckily, the cast was still with us, and the audience is. So that's, you know.
Oh, they'll be back. It was kind of a Portland tradition there. I mean, going back to 2014 with a little bit of hiatus in there. But I think that's true with pretty much every performing company now, orchestras, theater. So hopefully we've seen the worst of it and the boosters mm-hmm. will take over. But we were talking earlier before I started recording, and you have some, they won't be there, but a new stage manager has COVID, her yeah. husband, who is going to do the door. So it's a very safe environment, but it might be a little understaffed.
Show must go on. But show yeah, must it is go true on. That, I mean, COVID will continue to be something that we
it's with
have
us.
To,
yeah,
yeah, it's with
have
us. To work and with. We'll just have to work around and work with, and we take all the precautions, and, you know, we're doing what we can. And I'm sure that goes for every other theater production in town and every other live show. And people are, like you said, Ken, I think people are totally ready to come back and enjoy stuff communally, to, you know, actually go out again. And we've seen that already. I mean, earlier this year, our shows early this year were packed, and we're very, very happy.
Yeah. And we had no idea what was going to happen and respond. And we lost a certain percentage of our audience for various reasons. People moved and We had strict protocols in place.
Also, but, when your emails, your private emails, when they went public, we offended correct. A lot of people.
And
we
the lost
a lot of people.
Right. Big scandal.
huge scandal in the Tesla community.
But right. I think Jerry's recovered from that.
I mistakenly gave away the ending of Citizen Kane. I apologize.
Spoiler alert.
When we came back in March and we did our first show, we got our first standing ovation ever at the end. Mm. And part of it was we did a good show, but also the people just were so glad to be out and to be back. And since we've been back, our ticket sales and audiences have been very stable. It's been very consistent. Before, it might vary a bit. And now it's growing. I think the show will be our biggest since we've been back.
I certainly hope so.
Well, we'll talk about this show. I want to kind of start from the beginning for Tesla City Stories. It's a fascinating tale. Brendan, you received a fortuitous package one day at work, which you thought was a little kind of different or strange. And what was in the box? What was in that package?
Well, the box came from someone I'd already met down in California, but it was something that I wasn't expecting. I had been on the trail and in a very armchair detective way of trying to track down anything connected to the Tesla Broadcasting Company because they're ultra obscure. But I had had this lead connected to a family member of someone who had worked for the TBC back in the 40s. And I had been down in California where I had lived before, digging through literally public storage units connected and didn't find anything. And I was really disappointed. But the family member that I had been in contact with didn't forget about that. And she knew that her father and grandfather had multiple storage units, and they did uncover this box. And so, unbeknownst to me, she was like, no one's going to care about this stuff except for Brendan Jones. So she sent it to where she knew I worked, which was Powell's Books at the time. And inside that box was literally just, it was stacks of old paper and old mimeographs, and they were transcripts of the old TBC shows and completely disorganized, but it was a treasure trove because as far as I know, there have been no acetate recordings. Literally, if you ever heard of the TBC, it was always footnotes inside radio history books. But here I had, and still do, the stack of these scripts for their big shows, also some of their more obscure shows. It's not complete. There's still gaps in it. But at the same time, it's as far as I know, the world's biggest collection of TBC material. And I'm the proud owner of it.
Now, I remember Brendan, I think, we were living apart. He was in California. I was up here in Oregon. But I remember Brendan starting to talk about this in like 1999, around then, because he was kind of interested in this. And
I get obsessive about things anyway, but yes, it was all through happenstance of finding other people, especially in the early days of message boards, of people who were also fans of the really obscure stuff. And then finding out that someone was related to someone that actually had been like an engineer at the TBC, who was also an obsessive hoarder. And so, again, it did end up being this, that I was able to own these scripts and then didn't know what to do with them. And then, of course, it was Jerry's idea of kind of like, hey, why don't you perform them instead of just, because I thought about publishing them or just putting them online. And I'm like, no, I love that. Like, to resurrect them and do them on stage is a great idea. So, again, these shows haven't been seen or heard since the 1940s.
And I just want to let listeners know that was a very short-lived radio network.
TBC. Yeah.
Tesla Broadcasting Company operated, I think, from 1943 through 1945.
Yes, 2 years.
But they had a unique thing going. All the shows, and there were a variety of genres, so sitcoms, thrillers, mysteries, rom-coms,
soap
operas, even a few one-off, westerns, science fiction, horror, the whole gamut of radio theater. They all revolved around one fictional locale, which they made up, Tesla City.
Yeah.
And they pretty much created their own universe of stories, which was unique at the time.
Correct. And unique actually probably for, you know, even longer. It became much more prevalent in the days of television, but even then it was rare that they would connect things. So the idea that this radio network, you know, basically the reins of creating the shows were handed to one writer, main writer, and that writer's idea was, oh, our shows will all be in the same city and it doesn't matter what genre they are and our characters will cross over, which must have made the actors very happy because they were assured
steady job.
Yeah. A steady job. They were probably doing they were probably at the studios every day because their character might wander through and say two lines in someone else's show. So
and yes. it made you very happy because do you like comics, Brendan? I've heard you do.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Exactly.
Now, Brendan has a tremendous and wonderful comic book fan and historian, even maybe. This shared universe is very
that
common
stuff
in comic
is,
books.
And yeah, it's very common in comics.
Oh, the Marvel universe. Yeah.
They even yeah. Or that. DC or anything like uh-huh. that. It's all the idea that these amazing different adventures are all happening at the same time. And these characters know each other. That stuff is cracked for me. So it was a daunting prospect to dig into those scripts and then try to figure out their chronology and figure out where to place them. It's still actually a trick, but for me it is just fun. It's been like it's a huge puzzle to put them together and go, this happens before this, this happens after this because they're referencing this. So yeah, for me it's one big story. So Tesla City is the fictional city and every one of these shows happens in it or refers to it.
And one part of the show, Brendan, when he introduces the show, we'll often talk about the history
as much as I can, yeah.
of the TBC and events at that time. And I think it's a wonderful way to open the show to give context and learn things, you know, you might not learn. And that's one of the things I like doing about the show. In marketing and advertising, I like to look up things at the time. And I learn all kinds of things that, you know.
Well, yeah, period. It's definitely time travel of the kind. Yeah. It's very fun to... And it's true of all old-time radio. It is just a great glimpse into what was entertainment for, you know, my grandparents' generation or whatever. And
during the war years, too, where entertainment was somewhat tempered by people's anxiety.
Highly valued because it was an escape.
Yes.
Yeah.
Same thing with Depression era radio and movies.
Yeah, it's true. It's interesting when you look back, when you say escape, it's interesting. The TBC did do one war show, which almost no broadcast networks did because you didn't want to have a show set in the conflict because it would be too depressing. It would even if it was about heroes. You didn't get war movies really till later. You had patriotic movies, and then it was war movies towards the end of the war, and then you started dealing with that. But we still haven't gotten around to it. Hopefully next year we'll be doing Harpy Squadron, which was their one war show. And I don't think it was too successful, mainly because it had female leads and it was set in the war. So I think that had it. You know, it was going against it, but it's pretty interesting again for
but
the
what
period.
A treat to be able to hear it today.
I know. That's what I love is that we're still, you know, with each one of our shows, people aren't hearing the same ones over and over again. We're like, here's the next, you know, adventure of the Wraith, or here's the next thing that happens to Viola Harper. So it is a serialized bit, but you can also come and just listen to isolated. It's not so connected that you're lost if you show up and you haven't
right.
been to a show.
It before. Also speaks to the many of the stories were progressive at the time, like Harpy Squadron.
Yeah.
Because all female cast and
it's
also a great story.
Their legal drama, the trials of Prudence Fairley. It's like, again, the head writer, the one who came up with at least the concepts, if she didn't write all the scripts, there's no way she could. But their head writer was a woman who was named Dave Engstrom. And Dave, she is the brainchild who created the entire Tesla, I think, map and then let other people do this stuff. So she was already very progressive. She was an out lesbian and, you know, she pushed I think if you read into a lot of the scripts, she was pushing some very progressive stuff for the 1940s. On top of being, you know, like this writer who was creating a shared universe that no one was trying either. So she should be talked about a lot more than she is, because she was way ahead of her time. But of course, it was still an experiment that failed.
Now, I want to get to how you decided to perform these. In addition to receiving that box of transcripts, mimeographs mm-hmm. of the scripts, the original scripts, there was another happy coincidence where, Brendan, your brother Robin used to produce a live show in the late 90s in L.A. when he was living there. And he was in stand-up comedy, I guess. He had comedian friends.
Yeah.
And they would perform old-time radio scripts on stage
yeah.
under the name Fake Radio, because they performed in an art space called Fake Gallery.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew that there was actually an audience for that.
I did not know that. I didn't know that part about Fake Gallery.
You didn't know that's where the name came from?
No.
Fake Radio. And so it is in the blood, you could say, that my love of old-time radio came directly from my older brother, Robin, who was into a lot of things I became into first. So it's the little brother thing of, like, following what your older brother is doing. And when we both lived in L.A., he did have that idea. He loved old-time radio. He was a stand-up comic. He knew a lot of up-and-coming talented people, a lot of whom were in our shows as guest stars, who are now quite famous. And you're like, oh, great. Tom Kenny came in to do Old Man Potter in our version of It's a Wonderful Life. So it was that kind of thing. But he would just hand out scripts of actual classic old-time radio shows to his comedian performer friends, and we would perform it. I would get to be a character or two, and he would do a few characters, and it actually became fairly successful. And then when he moved away off to the East Coast, he handed Fake Radio off to one of the longtime cast members, Dave Koff.
I want to mention David.
Yeah, David is an amazingly talented guy, and fortunately for all of us here in Portland, he lives here and teaches improv. He does some life coaching, and he has kept Fake Radio going. Like, Robin gave him the reins, and it's still going.
With some great guest actors. David on the show. It was one memorable night where he did War of the Worlds, Fake Radio.
Yes.
And the special guest was Phil Proctor of the Firesign Theater.
Yes.
So we had in the studio, when we were in the studio, when it was open pre-pandemic, Phil Proctor, mm-hmm. David, the illustrious Sam Mowry, who's probably the best voice actor, if not in the country, certainly in Portland, but maybe the whole world. I mean, he sounds like Orson Welles reborn. And then a man named Jonathan Stark, who co-created According to Jim with Jim Belushi, the TV show. He's a TV writer and actor in Los Angeles. So it was a great night for me to have them all there. But Fake Radio, I think they still do maybe two or three productions a year.
Mm-hmm. I think so. They too, of course, faced the pandemic. And it was interesting in the fact that, of course, we knew about Fake Radio, but we were up here. We had already been doing Tesla for several years. And David Koff lived in Portland, but we didn't know.
we didn't know. And I had known David when he was in Fake Radio, and we were both living in L.A. And then it was like suddenly like being hit with a pan in a cartoon. I was like, he lives here? It was just like,
what?
So we reconnected, which is great, because Fake Radio is still, I mean, it's David's to continue, but I always feel sort of like that's still in my family as well. And it's like our sister show.
It is very much. And when watching Fake Radio, you can see some similarities to ours. Like, I can go, oh, okay. So there's like some cross DNA a little bit.
What David does and what my brother did is slightly different than what we do.
Yes.
I think because our shows are not really familiar. In other words, our stuff is really obscure. I try to have our cast stick to the script, to do the, you know, as closely as possible. Let's do the shows that haven't been heard for 40 some odd years. And David, with Fake Radio, they do the really established stuff, like War of the Worlds, like It's a Wonderful Life, a lot of the Lux Radio movie adaptations, and occasionally like episodes of The Shadow or Armis Brooks or things like that. And he encourages, which is great. because he has an amazing cast of improv comedians and actors. He, you know, they encourage them to play with the script a little bit. If they go off script, it's part of it.
The one exception was War of the Worlds.
Oh, good.
Because it was an anniversary. It was done around Halloween.
It might have been Halloween. Did about as straight as a fake radio.
That was the idea. Yeah, as straight as they could get. But I find it really incredible that what David's doing with fake radio, carrying on Robin Jones's, your brother's tradition, doing with the Tesla Broadcasting Company.
Didn't know it.
Yeah. I will say that when I told my brother that, because again, unfortunately, he's on the East Coast and has been for years, and I would love for him to be a part of, he would have continued doing fake radio until he died. But I would have loved to have had him in Tesla. When I told him that I was in possession of all those TBC scripts, it blew his mind, because he of course kind of knew about the TBC, and he's like, what? And I told him I was going to be doing a live show like fake radio but with those scripts, and yeah, it does kill him that he can't come out and be a part of it.
We got to get him out here
as we did have somehow. Him as a guest star in one of our episodes, Ken. I don't know if you were there for
I've been there for a lot of the shows, but I don't remember that one with
it was by remote, because there was
we're doing everything remotely.
It's pre-COVID
yeah, pre-COVID, but it was it was a mystery episode where the villain that has set up the mystery, it's a revenge plot, and all of the villain's dialogue had been on records. So pre-recorded messages of, I'll get you, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, this will be perfect, because my brother could do those, record them, and then we'll play them live. And I basically just said, do your Vincent Price impression. And he did, and it was so much fun. So my brother has been a part of Tesla, but it was by remote control.
I love that episode. I think we've done it twice, and on the second time, it was pre-recorded, and I was in charge of triggering them. And as often with live theater, things don't always go to plan technically, and my board quit working, and so it was a crucial line, and so I'm sweating bullets, and then. So I read the line, and my Vincent Price sounded a little different. not quite as good, but it worked. It kept the plot going.
Well, you do what you have to do.
You do.
Now, Jerry, you also, in addition to getting Robin in there in the show as pre-recorded stuff, you also do some digital sound effects.
We also do
a kind of some old-fashioned sound effects. It's called Foley in the business, sound effects in general. And a lot of them are performed live on stage the old-fashioned way, just as they did on those old radio broadcasts in the 30s and 40s. And you have a stellar team of Foley artists performing those effects. It's a joy to watch. Can you tell us about the team, how you found them, and how they replicate those sounds? Footsteps, shutting door, a phone ringing?
Sure, I'll start. Our Foley artist is David Ian. He's wonderful. And we also supplement with digital sound effects. And you might think, oh, well, they didn't do that, but they kind of did, because they would have acetate records that they would drop needles on for certain sound effects. And back then, too, they had large, almost a cadre army of Foley artists. And we would like to do that. There's just not room on stage for 8 Foley artists. but he's really good. And Brendan's really, really good at directing the sounds and balancing them. And Brendan's done a tremendous job of really insisting on not being a part of the show.
It's a thing of having David with his amazing, skills, but also he has this incredible trunk of stuff that makes amazing sounds, but he is just the one guy. And occasionally he does have backup, but I have to work around that. And sometimes if we have to have a car chase with gunshots happening at the same time and things like that, it's sort of, we do mix and match. And so David sometimes will just surprise us where it's like, oh, don't worry about the campfire scene. He's like, no, I've got it right here. And suddenly he's doing birds and fire. And I'm like, oh, well, then scrap the pre-record. That sounds better than what we had.
And it's so much fun to watch him do it.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's part of the fun. I want to get to the show itself. Well, it's this Friday, and the repertoire of Tesla City Stories, again, going back to these TBC scripts from the 43 to 45, some are serials, and those are a continuing cast of characters, all taking place, of course, in this fictional city of Tesla City, across a variety of genres, which we talked about. Can you tell us a little bit about the scripts and which ones you'll be doing for the season 7 premiere?
Oh, absolutely. This premiere is because we try to cycle around the scripts we have the most of are their four biggest ones, the most popular ones, I suppose, which is why I have more scripts of those. And this time around, it is the romantic comedy Blevins to Betsy, which is about a young woman who didn't want to be a radio star but becomes one. And her,
I know the feeling.
Yeah, it's basically a biography of you, Ken.
That was incredibly arrogant.
Yeah, no, you are a radio star. I've seen you get mobbed in public. It's ridiculous.
Well, I know. Video kills the radio star. So Those days are over.
Have you noticed on podcasts too that now all the big ones are now having a video component to it?
Yes, because they want to get on YouTube.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, that's true. It's to get the eyes on it.
And I'm like, well, we're just kind of going back to television.
But
back to Blevins to Betsy, I'm sorry.
Sure.
No, that's all right. Yeah, so Betsy becomes a radio star. Her co-star is an extremely arrogant, yet somehow lovable radio star himself. And it's an unlikely romance. They will, they won't, they for, you know, however many episodes. But this particular episode is about both of them were supposed to go to a canteen to do like one of the World War II canteens where servicemen would be served by famous stars. That was the whole thing for a morale boost. You'd have celebrities dishing out food and dancing with the servicemen. But Betsy gets redirected by the head of the TBC. So basically, Blevins ends up having to work the canteen with his ex-wife Joan, who is quite a character. So it's basically that. And it weirdly ties in to the episode that will follow of a completely different show, because same night we're doing an episode of the Wild Card Mysteries, which is our Private Eye show. I feel so possessive of these.
There are a lot of Private Eye shows in old time radio. Yeah.
Yes,
We actually technically own the stories now because they were public domain.
That's true. We got them. That's true. Yay, we own them. But in the Wild Card Mysteries, the head of the TBC that we had just met in the previous episode is murdered. So he didn't last long. The mystery kind of ties in with some of the side goings on in the previous comedy episode. And Blevins and Betsy show up in this murder mystery. So Jack Wilde, who is the private detective, and his girlfriend Viola Harper, who is Betsy's sister.
And she has her own series too, by the way.
And she has her own sitcom. I know, it all ties in. It's a shipboard mystery of who killed the head of the TBC.
Oh, I love those.
Oh, I know. And so it does have a lot of sort of guest appearances by characters from Blevins to Betsy, because it's set in the fictional TBC. That's where your mind starts blowing up, because the TBC was the actual network, and they did a show called Blevins to Betsy. In Blevins to Betsy, the characters work for a fictional version of the TBC.
It's so meta. And it might sound funny to say at this point, but our show is all ages. It's a murder mystery, but it's not grisly.
Also, you know, the thing is that even the detective shows, this is stuff that aired on the radio in the 1940s. So they did not do anything that, you know, would really be inappropriate. Certainly the language isn't. And if there's murders, it gets solved. Everything's okay. Don't worry, everybody.
Now, of course, in the 40s, though, and 30s, and you could, listeners will know this from Christmas Story, kids used to sit around and just in front of the big radio, which was huge in those days, Admiral and Zenith, whatever the brands were.
Yeah.
And listen, but you do it exactly as it was done in the 40s, where your actors are on stage. They have microphones in front. They have their scripts in their hand. They're reading from the script, but obviously they're rehearsed. Sound effects, music, that's all cued. how do you make this a visual treat for the audience in addition to an audio one? Did you take cues from studying those old time radio broadcasts?
I was just going to say it was a lot of trial and error, actually. And I took a little inspiration because our show has grown. Jerry and I brainstorm along with our cast about ways to make the show more engaging. And at one point I had seen some pics of what fake radio had done in LA, including having they a couple of times had limited sets, and then also they had scrims where they were projecting like a set, and I was like, that's an interesting idea. So now we have, as far as a visual, in addition to us standing there looking very nice in our suits,
yes,
standing at the mics with our scripts in hand.
Let's talk about that for about 10 minutes.
Yeah. How good we look. We also have a screen above us, and we now have been doing slides for a couple of years now, slides that are the interiors of wherever they're going. So yes, it's not an actual play where we're changing costume and we're putting props up, but at least visually, if we've gone from an apartment to the interior of a car to a back alley where there's a shootout, you'll actually see a visual up above us of where we are. So we have created that. And really, though, it is so much of what they did back then that I will admit that it is still people standing at mics. And that's why
that helps transport you back to that time. I was going to mention a few things that definitely add to that. One is your venue itself. Old Church Concert Hall in downtown Portland. It was around in 1943.
I've never thought of that, but you're absolutely right.
But it actually goes back. I looked it up. It was built in 1882.
Yeah.
So you have that time machine effect of transporting the audience back to another era in American history.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the other day. I was just thinking about how old the old church, how long it's been around. And I was just imagining people through the decades, what they might look like in their dress all the way back.
Yeah.
Sitting in the old church. And I think that's really, really cool.
You can do a 140th year anniversary.
Well, they can.
They can, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. That's not your responsibility.
We're too busy,
then.
Ken. Yes.
Now, as far as the show and, you know, how it's presented, it's visually, it's interesting because people love seeing just the actors, you know, act the part. And then also Foley is really fun to watch. And there's a lot of atmosphere.
And another thing, too, which you didn't mention yet, Jerry, was the musical act.
We do. It's a big part of
Newport
our show.
The Nightingales, a vocal trio singing songs like from the repertoire of the Andrew Sisters.
That's correct. And also, we've been really fortunate. There's so much talent. It's so much creativity in this area. We have about four or five different acts that we rotate through that all fit the period, and it's great. It's wonderful. A lot of harmonies, and it's a really, really fun part of the show.
It's our show is the Tesla, you know, City Stories is the TBC shows, but it was pretty important to us even early on, and I think this I also kind of go back to fake radio where my brother would try to turn it into kind of a variety thing as well. But I remember saying to Jerry, it's like the shows are great. Like the actual episodes are great, but we might need to also to make it more full, like a 2-hour, you know, event. Yeah, definitely. We need to have different segments, and having a musical act is just great because for energy and just like you were saying, Ken, like a time travel element,
right.
When you have them up there doing the period music, and plus most of the acts that we have booked also go in for the visual of the time, like they dress in period costumes. I can't value it enough. It is an incredible part of it. And I sit back there while they're playing, just enjoying it.
we got to mention the cigarette girl, which was a common sight at nightclubs during that time.
We have a cigarette girl.
I don't think she's selling cigarettes, but other things.
Do you know what? We actually when we first had her, we actually did sell cigarettes, and we found out it was highly illegal.
That would have been my guess.
I think the OLCC against regulations. So,
well,
so
we were also handing them out to children, which I found out later is a no-no.
Offering them a light. I think that was going too far.
I kept saying the first one's always free. And I don't
know why that's we switched to candy cigarettes, and I've been able to find vintage candy cigarettes that they still make, not cigarettes that were made in the 40s, but
we've had our cigarette girl over the years. Man, that just sounds like, over the years
back when we started.
She's also sold like Beeman's. Like occasionally Jerry does just go hog wild on finding like vintage candies, a lot of which are still made, so like Beeman's chewing gum and things like that, but of course also Junior Mints and M&Ms and things like that. So she's more a candy girl than a cigarette girl, but I give Jerry full props on that. That was producer Jerry going, what can we add, and then that's a perfect thing, because they did have that at theaters, movie theaters, and live event theaters. You would have someone walking the aisle selling, you know, concessions, so no one would have to get up out of their seats.
I also want to mention a mutual friend of ours, Dennis Wright. He's the founder and director of the Radio Days Theater of the Mind Museum in Sutherland, Oregon, which is just a little wonderful. North of Roseburg.
Wonderful place.
And I heard from Dennis, actually, that he'll be bringing an old-time radio exhibit to your show possibly in October.
Yeah, that's correct. They've been on our show probably 5 or 6 times before.
Yeah.
And when they can make it, it's a bit of a
slog, and they bring so much stuff.
They bring all kinds of stuff.
Is the draw? It is like crack to me, and I've warned him a couple of times. It's like,
don't do crack, kids.
I've warned him, like, if you turn your back, I will be walking away with that shadow statue.
And the Dakota rings.
Look over there, Dennis. What's that?
Dakota rings. Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable the kind of stuff he has.
You'll have your own superhero or the Wraith Club, right?
Yes.
Starting up. And you'll be giving out or selling a Dakota ring.
Well, that is a big spoiler, Ken. And
Sorry.
No, that's all right. At this point, no one's listening. It's okay. It's just us now.
That's the beauty of this.
No, actually, it is something that I'm very much looking forward to, because next month, October, it's not necessarily for Halloween, but it just worked out that way. In October, we'll be doing a two-parter of The Wraith, who's the supernatural crime fighter of the TBC. And since we're doing a two-parter, I was like, it's time to finally launch the Wraith fan club, just like they would have had for, you know, like they had for the Shadow, like they had for the Green Hornet and Lone Ranger. And so I'm looking forward to that. It'll have a membership certificate, and there is a thing that you could frame that talks about the Wraith's code of conduct, and there'll be a decoder amulet. It's going to be just great, and also really twisted, because the Wraith is a pretty grim character, and I love the fact that they're aiming this at a 6-year-old. So it's going to be an interesting thing, but I think it's just another way we're expanding it. Where we can, we try to make the experience of the Tesla City Stories that much more like actual radio shows of the 40s, and a fan club is just part and parcel.
I promise we're not sponsored by Ovaltine, however.
No, it will not be Ovaltine.
That was the downer in Christmas Story.
Yeah.
But he went to all that trouble with his decoder ring.
He's decoding and drink
Ovaltine. Yeah. Now, I want to get possibly serious here. But we talked about how the audience is transported back to these days, the last years of World War II, 43 to 45, mm-hmm. Which seem nostalgic to us today in many ways, but they also must have been filled with a lot of uncertainty and dread for those living through the war and not knowing the outcome at that point.
Yeah.
I have to ask, do you see any parallels between that time and our present here in 2022?
No, not so. Did anything?
right.
What did we miss the last couple
Foolish
of years?
Foolish question.
Brent and I just did a trip to the Caribbean. We missed it all. So,
golly, if only. But No, I, the thing is, every now and then, just again, by chance, something that we're doing for Tesla City Stories will bump up against something that's happening, you know, presently. And there was an episode of The Wraith that had to do in a roundabout way with how important a free press and journalism is. And, you know, I don't want to underscore. I don't want to sit there and just go, huh, huh, you get it? But in my intro, I did sort of have to say, look, it is times change, but these issues, these yeah. causes and themes, they echo and resonate. There was one when we did the one so far episode of The Trials of Prudence Fairley, which was the legal drama. That two-parter had to do with a Japanese-American woman being accused of being a spy, and it actually talked about the internment camps, which I'm not sure that many radio shows of the 40s were actually dealing with the Japanese-American internment camps, and it had a strong message about you know, immigrants and how important they are to the American fabric. And that was around, we were doing that when, you know, ICE was coming to fore and people were getting locked in cages at the border. And, you know, it did feel very prescient. So to answer your question, I can't say the times are the same, because they were certainly going through something incredibly intense. And as they say, the last good war, well, it's a war that we all agree on, you know, who the villain was, so good for us. But it was still a war. And as you say, that was an incredibly uncertain time. This is an uncertain time in a different way, just like the Cold War was an uncertain time in a different way. But I think that, you know, even entertainment speaks to stuff. And so the writers of the TBC were writing about things that audiences of today can sit there going, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's universal themes. I know, like, during COVID, when we couldn't do anything much, and the whole world was facing. So there is a strong parallel to, because people forget, like what you say, Ken, it's fun and it's nice to be nostalgic about the 40s. And it's a lot of neat things in that period, artistically and fashion. However, people were filled with unbelievable existential dread. I mean,
sure,
it was fighting literally for our society and lives and freedom. And so it is different with COVID in one sense, but the idea of, like, we didn't know if we could ever do the show again. We didn't know if it was going to come back. And so it was a humbling experience, as we all faced. And we're just so grateful that we have made it back and can continue to do this show. There's a lot of things in it that are, as Brendan says, prescient.
And it's not just COVID. I would say that at that time, the threat of fascism was external, coming from outside the U.S. And now, for some reason, and I still don't understand it, the threat of fascism is coming from within.
Yeah. I know. It is. It's gross.
I can see the headline. Brendan Jones says it's gross.
It's gross. And here's my hot take on it. It's gross. But I will say that, you know, I am still, when I'm picking and choosing what we'll be doing next for the Tesla City Stories, I'm still kind of just trying to go chronologically with the way the scripts, as far as I can tell, are laid out. It's just fun for me to sit there and realize, yes, they are talking about the same things. And fascism is a bugaboo that comes up in a lot of those scripts. Specifically, of course, it's not going to be as much in the comedies, but it's shown up quite a bit in The Wraith and, of course, in The Detective Show. And there have been plenty of Nazi spies oft in the show so far. Anyway, so yes, but I also don't want people thinking that it's a big message show. It is. It
is. Oh, no, not by any means. I was kind of getting a little off track there.
No, but that's fine, because it is just like in the 40s. They slipped stuff in where they could, but they knew And this goes for every show. They knew that their main job was trying to alleviate a lot of that, what you're talking about, the stresses, the existential dread that Jerry was talking about. Entertainment is still incredibly important.
They needed that escape. Very important escape. And also in our show, it's all are welcome. We get it's wonderful because we all get to be there for the same reason, to enjoy the show. And it's can be a very communal bonding experience.
Yeah.
And that's why we love doing this. It's rewarding for us, and our audiences really, really seem to enjoy it. And
however, Nazis are not welcome.
That is true.
We haven't put it officially on our press information, but we think it's understood. Nazis not welcome.
Now, before we go, where can our listeners, other than the Nazis out there, and I hope there aren't too many of those, find out more about Tesla City, get their tickets for the season premiere, and maybe preview some of the past shows if they like?
I'll just go to our website, teslacitystories.com, or you can go to TeslaTix.com to get your tickets. And you can learn more, you can read about history, see more about our shows, and come on out. We got a few tickets left for this Friday show. And I think you will love it.
Yeah. Season 7 is off and running, and the next 3 months are all great shows, and looking forward to having good crowds for October and November as well.
Well, Jerry and Brendan, thanks so much for talking with us today, for joining us in our somewhat belated celebration of National Radio Day, which was August 20th. But you guys, Tesla City Stories, is certainly keeping the spirit of radio, especially old-time radio, alive.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks for having us, Ken. It's a real pleasure. We appreciate it.
Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KABU Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear the longer, unexpurgated version, the director's cut, you might call it if we had a director, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, J-O-N-E-S-Y, or just search for it on the KABU website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guests today, Jerry Chrisman and Brendan Jones, no relation, of the radio theater company Tesla City Stories. Tesla City will be opening their 7th season, joined by musical guests the Newport Nightingales, this Friday, September 9th, at Portland's Old Church Concert Hall. You can learn more about the season premiere and all their upcoming shows at teslacitystories.com. Just to note that KABU is your community radio station, and we get over 80% of our funding from our members. To support the station and programming like this, there's no better time to become a member yourself or renew your membership. Just go to kboo.fm and click on the big donate button. All of us here at the station, even Jonesy himself, and Brendan Jones too, I think. Thank you for that. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the 2nd and 4th Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, September 22nd at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying,
we now return you to your life, already in progress.